Welcome to the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge, a weekly show from our Toronto Maple Leafs writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, prospects, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, our team covers everything that happens with the blue and white. Come on in and pull up a chair. Welcome to the Maple Leafs Lounge.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this soft and purposeless. No, not that. It's a great show. It's the Maple Leafs Lounge. I'm your host, Kevin Armstrong, joined as always by my friends and colleagues, Peter Barrichini and Alex Hobson. It's been an interesting week, and Sheldon Keefe had to call out his team after what we've all been watching is a soft and purposeless few games, and it seemed to work because things kind of turned around. So before we get into that New York trip, let's talk about Keefe and the call out. What were your thoughts on that? We'll start with you, Alex.
You know what? I know we've touched on something that was very similar to this topic a couple times, and anytime I hear about Keefe calling out his team when they have a good effort and when they get the win, but they don't play well, or in games like recent memory, when they play soft and purposeless, every single time I think back to that clip in All or Nothing from the 2021 season where the Leafs played a game, didn't play well, and Sheldon Keefe was kind of giving them the gears for it. And Jill Thornton said something along the lines of, "Relax, coach, we're in first place." We all saw how that worked out down the stretch towards the playoffs. So you know what? The Leafs have played better hockey this year as a whole, but I am a firm believer that if they don't play a good game, they need to hear about it. And they at no point can they get complacent. So Sheldon Keefe is right. I mean, this is what, like 4 or 5 games in a row where the Leafs have had a lead, then they've blown it. And I know that they came away with the win in a couple of those games, but that's not something you want to make a trend. You don't want to come into every game with the assumption that you're going to play 20 minutes and then take the rest of the game off. We saw that doesn't work in the playoffs. We saw how it doesn't work in the regular season, especially when you've got teams that are willing to fight and keep their foot on the gas and kind of drive you out of the building. So I was happy with Keefe saying those comments. And also I really liked how Morgan Riley backed him up and agreed with him. I think that was a very, quite the veteran move from him, because we've seen in the past that this team sometimes can get to a point where they think, oh, you know what, we've got a pretty comfortable lead. We can kind of, take it easy here. And almost always comes back to burn them. So I am all for Sheldon Keefe calling out his team. They're big boys. I'm sure they understand that Keefe isn't coming at them personally. He's not trying to be harsh on them. And like he said in the media the other day, he clarified to the media that he had already had that conversation with this team before he went and called them soft to the media. So I'm in full support of Keefe doing that because they need to hear it.
Peter, anything to add?
Not really. I mean, Alex basically covered it. Just don't get too complacent. I mean, when you have a 3-1 multi-goal lead like they did against the Rangers, the Avalanche, the Blues, you want to buckle down and play strong defense, but you don't want to take your foot off the gas. And I think that's where they got a little bit carried away, because they were making too many mistakes, coughing out the puck, creating too many turnovers. And that's what ended up costing them, valuable points, and in some cases, just hanging on by a thread. We know they're dealing with the COVID situation, although I do believe Kasha and Hall have been removed from the COVID protocol list. So that's good news. But I don't think they're still able to return to some sort of capacity. But at the same time, we saw Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren try and gain some momentum and try and earn those minutes. And for the most part, they played well. But then again, mistakes caught up. They're young. For some of the veterans, some of those mistakes are just absolutely inexcusable. And when you see them, take your foot off the gas, think that they could get by with little floating passes out of their zone, that's not going to cut it. And, they could have had multiple opportunities to expand their lead in the standings. Boston's only 3 points behind them right now. They were able to get their act together and hold on to that 3-1 lead against the Islanders. So good on that. But now the consistency has got to be there, because right now you have other teams coming up in the standings, and now objects are closer in the mirror than they appear to be. So, I mean, Alex said it. Keith nailed it on the head. I would have said the same thing, because even though you have the belief in your team and you want them to succeed, at times you got to call them out, and the effort was unacceptable. And the fact that it happened for 4 or 5 games straight, I think it was enough. And I think it was at that time he needed to say something. He did. Team took note of it. They won. Now let's see if they can go on a roll right now because they have some momentum on their side.
I'm going to add that I think this is another great chapter in the coaching evolution of Sheldon Keefe and how we have seen him develop as a NHL coach. And I go back to early when there was the struggles early in the season. And I remember writing an article about the blame game is starting and the something else that they're not competitors. And Sheldon was saying those things like he, you know, when they got the win in Chicago, it was a good win. Although that was the Blackhawks were still winless at the time and they just escaped with that win. So it shows the amping up, like his expectations. And now when they're at a level where, yeah, they won a few of those games, but they weren't playing right. And he's calling them out for even good performances now, or you get the win performance. That's not good enough. So you've seen him kind of ramp up the standard all the time and push them further and further. And I really like watching that with Keefe. He kind of develops them and then doesn't let them fall back. And it's we're seeing the fruits of that labor this year. And like you guys have said, they've got to maintain that standard that Keefe and they have worked so hard to get to at this point. Let's transition then to the Big Apple takeaways, one win, one loss. And they responded after the call out against the Rangers. That was a frustrating game to watch. A little bit more like the Leafs of old playing against the Islanders, much more contained game. So what are your guys' takeaways on that? Alex, I know you're writing the takeaways from that game, so we'll start with you.
Yeah, I thought they responded really, really well last night. And more than anything, my main takeaway from last night's game is that Peter Mrazek gave the Leafs a very solid performance, which is what they needed. Obviously, you know, Jack Campbell, as great as he's been this year and as easy as it is to fall in love with the idea of him being the full-time starter and being their guy in between the pipes, I think it's also worth noting that his career high amount of starts in a season is 31 and he's already started 29 of 38 games now, I believe it is, for the Leafs. So it's starting to show a little bit. I know that the Leafs did have a break towards the end of December and the start of January around that time. But Jack Campbell in his last four games, he had allowed 18 goals and I'm not going to pin those losses solely on him because I think like we just spent our last bit talking about how the Leafs blow leads and take their foot off the gas. But at the same time, you can see that the rust is kind of starting to show with Jack Campbell. So I think for Peter Mrazek to come in and give the Leafs the start that they need to give Campbell a day off, I think was crucial for them. And the Leafs put up a good performance in front of Mrazek. And overall, I mean, the Islanders play a very trap style shutdown game of hockey. And we saw that there weren't too many shots in the first half of the game. But I think the Leafs did a good job playing a good tight defensive game and just keeping the puck out of their net. Really, I don't have anything else to say besides that. I think they got a good performance from Mrazek in between the pipes. I really like the third line's contributions last night as well. And Morgan Riley, like you were talking before the show, Peter, he had a great game last night as well. So I think it was all in all, it was a good bounce back effort from Wednesday night's game against the Rangers.
Want to wrap that one up, Peter?
Yeah. I mean, that was a solid 60 minute effort. I mean, a couple of times in the third period when Islanders were mounting the pressure, that was to be expected that the Maple Leafs kind of lost sight of where they were going with their connections in the passing and breakouts. But ultimately Mrazek was there, no harm, no foul, maintaining the line, holding or keeping the puck out, doing a great job. And even in the last few minutes when they pulled the goalie, Toronto was doing a great job of keeping the puck to the outside, not giving the Islanders any space in the middle and getting in the lanes, blocking shots and doing whatever they can to preserve the W. So that was my main takeaway. There were response to shutting down because throughout that or opportunities in the offensive end. So the fact that they had that two-way game going on, the fact that they were able to get back despite still being down a couple of main bodies in the lineup, it's a really good sign. And you know, I'd even go a little bit further to say that the game against the Arizona Coyotes where Mrazek was in net, I thought he played really well. Again, team in front of him with costly turnovers and bad decision-making led to two costly goals. So I would say that in two back-to-back starts, Mrazek has looked really good. And considering that, you know, I was a big critic of him, considering his performance previously before, I think he's starting to come around right now. So if you give him more opportunities, give him more ice time and more starts, I think it's going to go well for him and well for Campbell down the line.
Well, it kind of morphed this one into the Mrazek talk that we were going to do later on, but I'm going to say right now, I don't like Peter Mrazek. I do not like him. And I know that sounds personal, but every time I see him on the ice, I'm like, that's you there instead of Frederik Andersen. And I love Freddie Andersen. And look at what Freddie Andersen's doing. We've talked about this, and it's just, I can't get through that mental block. And it did not help that he has had an awful start to his Maple Leafs career. He's got a lot of work to do in my books to try to win me back over. But, and I also don't like that he has played against some of the lowest competition that the Leafs have played against. You know, like he's played Ottawa, the Red Wings, the Blackhawks, Arizona. Like he's not going against the Colorados of the world. So Mrazek, he better start earning that $3.8 million because that costs the Leafs not only the money, but it costs the Leafs Frederik Andersen. It costs the Leafs a lot of other things. So that's my issue with Mrazek.
Yeah, just to add to that. No, sorry, it's all good. I was just going to say, just to add to that point a little bit, I know that it's hard to wrap our heads around, you know, giving Mrazek a break here, because especially seeing what Jack Campbell's been able to do, and like you said, Kevin, seeing what Freddie Anderson's doing in Carolina this year, the Leafs certainly haven't gotten their $3.8 million money's worth on Peter Mrazek so far. But I will say that it's tough for a guy like him to get into the rhythm when he's only starting once per month. And I know that it's the groin injury, it's his durability has been a question in the past, but I think Mrazek is one of those guys who, as much as he's not used to being a full-time starter like a Freddie Andersen or like what Jack Campbell's been doing this year, he is a guy that is used to starting once a week. And I think, just like Peter said when we were wrapping up that last bit there, I think if there's any time that we're going to see a good version of Peter Mrazek, it's going to be throughout the month of February, because we're starting to see Jack Campbell slow down a little bit. And now the Leafs have an opportunity to get Mrazek starting maybe every other game, maybe once every three games, something like that. And when you get a guy into a rhythm, and I mean, hopefully, you know, God help him, hopefully his injuries don't become prevalent again, because he missed pretty much the first half of the season because of that. But, you know, if he can stay healthy and he can stray together a couple of starts, I think that's going to be huge for not only the Leafs goaltending situation, but for the team as well, because then, you know, you've got Jack Campbell who can come in and play the way that we all know we can. And then you've got Mrazek, who, I mean, I hate going back to last season's sample size because he only played 11 games, but he did have Vezina numbers throughout those 11 games. And I think if they can get him to a point where he's starting, he's playing even like a fraction of how he was last year, I think the Leafs will be in a much better position going forward with their goaltending. But I do understand where the feeling comes from, that he needs to, this is sort of like his time where he needs to step up and really prove himself, because you're right, he hasn't earned that $3.8 million yet. He just needs to stay healthy, and the Leafs need to get him starting games, because the longer that you waste him on the bench, the less value you're going to get out of him.
So is there the problem, though? I totally agree with everything you're saying, Alex, but is there the problem then that if you start him more often, that Jack Campbell gets out of the rhythm?
Well, I think in that case, it's one of those things where you just have to play it day by day. I mean, I don't think the Leafs should really I don't think the Leafs should really commit to starting one guy more than the other right now. I think if Peter Mrazek's playing well, then you keep starting him. That's really all it comes down to at this point. Same goes for Jack Campbell. I mean, you know, I think the Leafs, when they brought in Peter Mrazek, they brought him in to be a 1B type of goalie, because that's the type of role that he's been used to in the past. And, you know, if the Leafs can get a good version of Jack Campbell and get a good version of Peter Mrazek, I think you just got to start whoever the better goalie is. And you know, if one goalie starts to show signs of rust, and like you said, if Jack Campbell, you know, starts to fall out of the rhythm a little bit, well, that's up to him to put in the work and get back into the rhythm we know he can be in, because neither of these guys are used to starting 60 games a year. So I think you can use that to your advantage and really get as much out of each of them as you can. And in a perfect world, the Leafs find themselves in a scenario where they can feel comfortable going to either of those goalies, but that's not going to happen until Mrazek gets a couple of starts in a row and gets into a rhythm.
Peter, your final thoughts on this topic?
I kind of want to see, like Alex said, you want to try and get him into a rhythm and get him going. I think maybe if maybe not cut back on Campbell's starts way too much, maybe 2 to 3, and then every 2-3 games you insert Mrazek in. I think that's going to help out no matter what. Even if you don't start Mrazek on back-to-back nights, I think if you have that system in place, it's going to alleviate some of the pressure off Campbell. And we saw what kind of happened with the Washington Capitals, and I'm not trying to compare the Capitals Stanley Cup run to the Maple Leafs right now, but we saw what happened, how, you know, their goaltender took over the start, and then Braden Holtby came back in and was just absolutely lights out for them during that Cup run. So if they can try and find that common ground and a schedule in place for both players, then by all means, that's going to work out really well.
This week's show is being brought to you by The Morning Skate, a daily newsletter delivered to your inbox Monday to Friday, jam-packed with the best hockey stuff on the planet. It's a daily dose of the latest NHL news, rumors, history, funnies, quizzes, just a little hockey fun and information, brought to you every day of the week from the Hockey Writers. You'll see the link in the show description. So the blue line is not the blue line that we thought it would be. We've seen the troubles brewing. The top four is no longer a top four. It's more like a top two that's there. The second pairing has been troublesome the whole time. The five and six has been rotating. We've been kind of talking about Justin Hall a lot. Who knows what's going on there? Jake Muzzin, concussion out. Maybe the concussion had a lot to do with his play of late, because it hasn't been as great as we had hoped. And now there's rumors of always, and we're getting into the big rumor season now, of maybe trading for players, Darren Drieger throwing out some names. So let's talk about the blue line. Peter, you're up.
Yeah. I mean, given how a few weeks ago we talked about this and I was big on Colin Miller, I thought he was going to be a great target, but seeing as how he's on injured reserve right now, he's going to be out for some time. I don't know if he's still going to be on the Maple Leafs radar, given the fact that he is a right-handed shot. He is a two-way player. Isn't going to come back until mid-March. If that's something they're still willing to, you know, decide on and say, hey, we could take the week's loss and still bring him in, great. But, you know, there's also Josh Manson, who's going to be a UFA at the end of the season. Quite a bit of talk around him in the past. Again, another right-hand shot, $4.1 million contract left. I think that's something in the range that the Maple Leafs would like to try and get back, maybe retain $1 million or so just to help them out even more. But his ability to, you know, be mobile, block shots, hit, be that two-way defenseman that can provide some stability and some consistency over Justin Hall on Jake Muzzin's pairing. I think that those are some names that you're really going to look at, given how Hall hasn't been the top four caliber that they had hoped for in trying to protect him from the expansion draft and even in the first half of last season. So if they're able to bring in another D-man, clear up some cap space, I know Alex wrote a great article on what the Maple Leafs are going to try and do to alleviate some of that cap space. Remains to be seen. I do hope that if they need to make a deal right now, there's a situation right now, and I think Steve Dangle even talked about this, how they've only played two games in the next week or so, where they have multiple days off to try and get a deal in, get their, you know, Christmas shopping done ahead of time before the deadline, and try and form that chemistry, kind of like what they did previously in the past, get everything set up, get everything organized, develop some chemistry, and make that push for the Stanley Cup.
March 21st is the trade deadline. So we're in that 2 month window, but as we've seen in the past, often the deadline kind of fizzles because the big trades can take place a little bit ahead of time. And that's what Dubas has done, made the trades ahead of time. You want to make sure that as you're saying with Christmas, that the product is still on the shelf when you go and try to find it. So, I'm not sure where the blue line is. I'm thinking Josh Manson just needs to come to Toronto at this point because everyone's been writing about it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it just has to happen, doesn't it? Yeah. But yeah. I don't know what else can happen in the meantime, Alex.
Well, first on the note of Josh Manson, I think everybody's problems would be solved if he just simply came to Toronto because, you know, like you said, we've been talking about Josh Manson to Toronto. He would solve all of their needs in the flick of a switch, the snap of a finger, and then we wouldn't even have to talk about this anymore. But I do want to raise another name, and you know, you guys might not agree with it, and I'm not saying they should trade for him. I'm just throwing his name out there. John Klingberg out of Dallas. Now, when you think of John Klingberg, he's not what the Leafs need per se. He's more of a puck moving defenseman, offensive guy than versus the shutdown defenseman. And I know right off the hop, people are going to say that's not what the Leafs need. And I do agree. What I will say about John Klingberg is that the Leafs do not have any defensemen aside from Morgan Rielly who produces any sort of offense. Rielly's been doing a great job of it this year, but you look at their next highest scoring defenseman, Jake Muzzin and TJ Brody, I'm pretty sure are tied for 11 points. They've got Rasmus Sandin quarterbacking the second power play unit. And while he's doing a good job of it, he also only has 9 points and hasn't really contributed much there. So my thinking is that Klingberg's situation in Dallas is kind of deteriorating pretty quick. From what I've heard from people who watch the Stars a lot more than I do, it's almost like Rick Bowness, their head coach, is sort of suffocating him. And it's in one of those situations where he's just not working with their system anymore. I think he's requested a trade. And at that point, I would think his value goes down a little bit because if he's requested a trade, what's going to happen if the Stars keep him, right? So I wouldn't trade for Klingberg if he cost a King's ransom. But what I will say is if the Leafs were to trade for him, I think you're sort of adding a defensive defenseman. It's one of those things where you could add one internally in the sense that you put him next to Jake Muzzin. All of a sudden, you've got Muzzin in a role where he can focus on what he does best, which is defend and shot and block shots and throw big hits. And that's what he did in LA. His role was playing the top pairing alongside of Drew Doughty. Doughty was the one producing offense, and Muzzin was the one staying at home and getting the job done in the silent way. So while Klingberg itself isn't necessarily what the Leafs need, I think if there's an offer on the table and if there's something that you can do without forking over your entire farm system or your draft stock, you're adding a guy who can be your second power play unit. He can produce offense from the back end, and he can allow Jake Muzzin to focus a little more on the defensive aspect of the game, because when he's paired with Justin Hall, neither of those guys produce offense. So oftentimes you see Jake Muzzin trying to rush the puck maybe a little bit more than he should be, maybe making that last pinch that he shouldn't. Again, I don't know if Klingberg is worth the price that he would come with, but I'm thinking right now if he's requested a trade, his value is probably a little bit lower than it could be. I'd at least like to hear what the Stars would take for him, because I think he could be a sneaky option come the deadline.
Don't forget to sign up for the Hockey Writers Morning Skate at morningskate.io. So you don't miss the best daily hockey newsletter on the planet, delivered every weekday at 8 a.m. sharp. Be the first to know what's happening in the world of hockey. And what's happening in the world of hockey, I could sum it up. It's all in the East, and a lot of it's in the Atlantic. We're at about the halfway mark. The schedules are all messed up right now. Some teams are at 43 games played. Some are at 37. But you average it out, and we're at about the halfway point. And at this time, there are three Western Conference teams in the top 10. The rest are East and Atlantic, including Florida and Tampa, number one and number two. Boston has woke up. Pittsburgh has woke up. Everybody is in the party now. And I want to know how that plays out for Toronto. They've got a very busy 5 weeks ahead. They've got a busy schedule for the rest, really. We knew this was going to happen when they originally put this time aside for the Olympics, that it was going to condense the schedule on the other side. But things are about to get kind of hectic here. And there are some great teams in the Eastern Conference. So what are you guys expecting to see out of this? Is Florida for real? Florida is just lights out at this point. What else should we be watching going forward? Peter?
Yeah, definitely Florida is for real. I mean, you look at the depth that they made, the offseason moves, bringing in Sam Bennett at the deadline last year, bringing in Sam Reinhart. And the biggest X factor for me was Sergei Bobrovsky. Poor season last year. He wasn't living up to that $10 million contract that he signed previously. And many were wondering, is he going to be the answer? Is he going to be the one to help bolster their lineup and help them make a deep run? This year, he's putting that to rest. And I thought that Spencer Knight would have been the obvious choice to come in and probably steal the starting role if Bobrovsky continued to fail. And you know what? He's providing quality goaltending that you would want in a deep playoff run. They got great. Again, I mentioned their balance and depth up front and on the back end. That's Stanley Cup worthy to me. Tampa Bay, reigning Stanley Cup champs. But the fact that the Bruins are mounting a comeback right now after a slow start and some inconsistencies right now, Tuukka Rask has come back. And that to me is going to be a big reason why Boston has the opportunity to vault over a team like the Maple Leafs. If things continue to go south and they have those efforts where they have a lead and then they lose a game and then they're the result of their own demise. I mean, who's going to be the blame? Not the Bruins, not Tampa and Florida for continuing to win games. It's going to be the Maple Leafs for having efforts like that and not playing to the standard that Keith wanted them to. So now that's the fact that he's stepped in, took charge. Like you said, Kevin, he wants them to play to a high level of standard and competitiveness to be one of those teams in the East. Then it's going to be a real massive dogfight on what's going to happen at the end. I think Florida is going to win the division. I think it's going to come down to Toronto, Tampa, and Boston, where those final placements are going to happen. Is Toronto going to be in that top three? Who's going to be in the wild card spot? So I think that's going to be something to look forward to. And yeah, the thing going for the Maple Leafs right now is, yeah, they missed a lot of games, but they have a chance to make those up. And I think they're going to be fresh and can constantly play in those games. And they're going to be in game mode from here on out. Again, downside is they're playing too many games and they may be fatigued and it may cost them in the long run. I would hope for the former because too many times that the latter has happened. And I hope maybe this time that mentality is there, that they're ready to play their A game every single night and take that next step forward.
Alex, what are you watching for in the next couple of weeks, and especially when you talk about this powerhouse East?
Well, pretty much what Peter said. I mean, you know, the Leafs are in a point now when they can't really afford to take games off anymore. And it's not like they could afford to take games off at any point. I mean, I think different sport, but I think watching the Blue Jays this past year proves that the regular season matters. That one game that you think, oh, it doesn't matter, it's a wash, it could come back to bite you in the end. So I think at the very least, the Leafs need to recognize that there is literally no room for complacency and, you know, coasting, taking games off here and there, because you're right, that top four in the East is a dogfight. And if the Leafs, you know, if they want to give themselves the best possible chance to win, home ice advantage is a great start. And right now, I mean, they're right in the thick of the battle with Boston, Tampa, and Florida. And, you know, like Peter said, the one good thing that they have going for them is that they do have quite a few games in hand. I've got it up in front of me right now. Tampa Bay's played 43 games. Florida's played 41, whereas the Leafs have only played 38. So I think as of right now, it's just a matter of recognizing that you've got those games in hand and making the absolute best out of them. When you make up those games and they kind of align themselves in the schedule with those teams, because at this point, I mean, you know, you consider all the pressure on them based on the way last season ended, there is literally no room for anybody to take this lightly right now. And, you know, you can scream at the league all you want for arranging the divisions the way they are. I would love it if the Atlantic were combined with the Pacific or something like that. But obviously that's not going to happen. So you just got to make the best of the circumstances. And, you know, I don't want to hear any excuses or anything about being in the same division as some of these best teams, because you're going to have to play them eventually. So you might as well just prove to them why you are the best team instead of complaining that there's teams around you that are equally as good. That's just the way it is. Florida's built a great team. Tampa's built a great team. You know, you can never count out Boston. So I just think that they need to take every game day by day, and they need to keep putting their foot on the gas pedal to the metal every single night out, because that's what the other teams are doing. And, you know, if the Leafs don't want to follow suit with that, it's going to show up in the standings. So
the show is actually brought to you by Napa. We've talked about foot on the gas so much. I think we're talking racing at this point.
It's true.
Yes. I disagree though, Alex. I will be upset about the stupid playoff format. I hate the fact that Florida, Tampa, Toronto, three of the best teams, one of those teams is not going to be in the second round. And back in the day when we had the eight seeding, you know, that made sense to me. And, you know, I'm wearing my Rams jersey today because the NFL, they changed their playoff format. Oh my God, the NFL changed their playoff format. Like they did it and it's been great. It was a good weekend of football and they're doing it. So, you know what, league, pay attention, go back to what makes sense, keep the good teams in the second round and make the regular season worth something.
Just to clarify, I absolutely can't stand the playoff format either. I would much rather go back to the 1-8 format. That was the best way it was. All I was trying to say is that, you know, this is the way it is and it's the same for all the other teams. So the Leafs can't be making excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. I can still, yes, all right, fine.
It was a direction at the Leafs, not you, Kevin, don't worry.
You just ruined his rant.
Yeah, no, that was directed at you-know-who, the guy we won't go there today, but in case we haven't convinced you with our first two plugs, make sure you sign up for the Morning Skate newsletter. You'll get to relive some of Wes McCauley's most legendary moments as an NHL referee and more things about the most hated man in the NHL, Mr. Bettman. I ad-libbed that part. The kind of content that puts a smile on your face. So final words this week, I'm just going to throw out that I thought the strangest thing I heard out of the Maple Leafs this week was when Mitch Marner said he did not watch the games. He said he watched some of the games, usually until the end of the third period. And there was one game when he was on COVID protocol that he didn't watch the game. I thought that was the strangest thing I've ever heard. He's sitting at home and he doesn't watch a game. He said he had a scheduling thing. He had to be there somewhere early next morning. It's like the amount of people, like I'm in the West, so these games don't affect me. But the amount of people I see on Twitter whenever they're in the West and they're like, oh, coffee's on. I'm watching. I'm staying up late. And they might be dragging butt when the alarm goes off in the morning the next day. But Mitch Marner gets paid $10 million by this team and he doesn't even stay up and watch the game. Are you kidding me right now? Second rant of the day. I've had too much coffee. But anyway, you guys have any final words?
Well, first of all, I didn't even hear that Mitch Marner didn't watch the games. I thought you were going to go in the direction of Mitch Marner saying, we got to stop taking our foot off the gas again. Because I heard that quote after the Rangers game, and I was just thinking, like, I don't want to hear people say that anymore. I know I've said it myself, but I'm supposed to because I'm the guy talking about the games. I'm not the guy playing them. So anyways, I don't really have anything else to add. No, I've got a piece coming this week on the whole Mrazek Campbell situation to keep an eye out for. Shameless little self plug there. And I'm also looking to do a piece on three potential trade targets on the Chicago Blackhawks. So those are two pieces for me to keep an eye on this week.
Great. Peter, what are you working on?
Something on Morgan Riley. I know we all love him. And something about three things to look out for in the second half of the season coming up. And I just want to give a big shout out to Mitch Marner for actually breaking the 100 game streak of a power play goal. I guess he must have listened to our segment last week on what can be done to improve on that. And he was wide open for a one-time opportunity from a beautiful pass from Willie Nylander. So good on Marner, and three straight games where he scored in different situations, even strength, power play, and shorthanded. So let's hope that goal scoring streak can continue because he really needs it.
We call it the lounge cure. As soon as we talk about it on here and we go, we need to change things, suddenly the guy scores the next week. So definitely nice to see. And as soon as they saw it, I saw comments start on my article that I said after we did our show last week that we said maybe he should be tried on the second unit, going, oh, that didn't age well. Come on. Hard time. That's the show for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a good one, and it will be a great one next week, as we always promise to bring the goods on this show and keep our foot on the gas. See you next week.